I'm getting, is that you again, McBain? I'm getting like a boom boom.
You just told me to You just said, hey, hit the keyboard a bunch, and I said, yeah,
okay. Have you considered putting your mic in a separate place on the keyboard though?
Logistically it's challenging.
Buy you an arm for Christmas?
I see you're making a link. Okay, I'll just stop.
Oh, it's so pink.
Keep on making dream creature cards with power levels that are insane. I need something to grab on my bones. Zenith is its name. She's got it. She's always just got it. Cast your zenith to find a place to hide. Cast your zenith to find a place to hide. The very Neptune by wasteland. And Leo Volt so you can't draw cards. Burrows getting value all day. Endurance eats graveyards. She's got it. She's always just got it. Cast your zenith to defy the place and higher. Cast your zenith to defy the place and higher.
Hello, welcome to the Kagan Threshold, the Legacy Podcast that's hoping for a new Legacy variant before we get a new COVID variant. My name's Quinn Amore. I'm here as always with my co-host, Jeff Kinsey. Jeff,
hello. Hello.
My co-host, Brandon McBain. McBain, how's it going?
Great. Great joke. I loved it.
Thanks for that approval. You might think we would talk about that after the show, but we just put that in there, positive reinforcement. Bearing the lead, though, because a very special guest joining us this week, all the way down the I-5 from Seattle, where we can actually, speaking of COVID, we actually go there now. Tim Wilder, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody, great to be here.
I think now I'm thinking of this now, like we should probably talk about some context, because we're like, do you want to have Tim on? I was like, oh yeah, that'd be great, because we know each other from playing Magic against each other over the years. I think all four of us, different periods of time.
I believe you mean losing to Tim.
Yes.
We know Tim through losing to him. Yes. Yeah.
Occasionally I'll be on some degenerate combo deck and I'll just kind of get under. But yeah, in real games of Magic, yeah, not a good record. We can talk about that. We can talk about records against him maybe in recent Magic tournaments later on. But one of the reasons we wanted to invite you on was a great top 8 finish at Eternal Beacon Sylvan Library, piloting Blue Zenith, which I want to say right now is not High Tide if you're confused like me when you heard that name, and is a deck that I, when I think of you, I'm like, oh yeah, of course this is the kind of deck you're playing, and I mean that in the best way, but we'll get into that a little later. Before we do that, let's do some quick housekeeping and then we'll go back to the main attraction.
All right, it's still very brief. It comes down to weeklies at Stronghold, going strong, 7 p.m. Pre-reg, I don't think is necessary anymore, given that I've shown up the last two times without pre-registering and went, fuck, and Josun got me in. Don't know what the policy is on paper, but it works out. Then the only thing I have here is McBain's favorite, the Fire Walk With Me old school event, March 18th and 19th. We all got roasted, at least through me, for not knowing anything about Twin Peaks. So I apologize. I haven't learned anything else since. But there's a variety of Twin Peaks flavored events and some artists, and they're raising money for Child Haven. Have I hit it, McBain? That's all the notes.
You got to pick an artist now and a favorite art really quickly, right off the top of your head.
Impossible. Can't be done. They're all so good.
Okay, Margaret, is it Organ Keen?
Okay. I mean, Tarpan. I mean,
Caracas.
Well, okay. Caracas is.
Caracas is
Benson.
Yeah, come on.
I don't know.
Yeah. Or Nicola, what's her actual name? Nicola something.
I mean, look,
Leonard is her.
Leonard, yeah.
Going back to Margaret Oregon Keene, I mean, you can't beat tarpon.
I actually have a line on an LED right now. I'm going to be a proud owner of one LED soon. So maybe I'll take it down there and get it signed. Who knows?
Man, she's started a lot of horses.
What's it up is like, hey, we got another horse in the file.
Yeah, so Broken Visage, Dwarven Pony, Dwarven Traitor.
Were these all like the one set? Or is
Hyperion,
it like
Sacred Mesa?
Sacred Mesa, Tarpan, and like not exactly the same, but like close enough, Zebra Unicorn.
I mean, I said Pegasus, so...
Yeah, that's a lot of equine
yep.
creatures.
Do you think what's the if you were to break it down by artist, like what artist do you think has done the most of a particular animal? This has to be up there, especially like a percentage of art
with quality content, I think.
Yeah, and they also don't do this anymore, right? Like, they're not going to just say, give us 9 pictures of horses and we'll figure out the cards.
Yeah.
Top-down design.
A little more direction now, yeah. I think my favorite, I'm looking at, like, the Scryfall page now. I think it's Thalanite Druid. I don't know if you guys remember this card.
Oh.
And it's always been, like, funny to me because the Druid's pointing and then, like, the tree branch is, like, mirroring the pointing and then, like, maybe someone who knows shit about art might be like, that's actually like this technique. But when I was a kid, I was always like, why is he pointing with the tree branch? I don't get it.
It's like he's just showing you something really cool out of frame, or he's trying to remind you that he costs 2G.
Yeah. All of it's helpful, except for the actual card, which is ink rate.
Okay, so I think I successfully derailed us.
That was the rail you chose to put us on.
I know.
Yeah, it was the trolley problem.
It was the trolley problem for sure. Podcast
or talk about artists.
So maybe I'll start with this. So Tim, thank you for joining us. It's lovely to have you. At least see you over webcam here. I know it's been a while since we've got to play in person. For those listening, I think, Tim, you've come up to Vancouver at least once or twice, but typically we're going down to Mox and playing in some of the 1K or 5K or 2.5 or other numerical numbers in legacy events. And Tim is typically in contention for winning the event, I would say. You're typically putting up a top 8 once or twice.
We try.
Yeah. And well, we'll get into it later about how you kind of came onto my radar, at least about being a player on Magic Online. But maybe just for the listeners, like, could you tell us a little bit about yourself from a Magic context?
Yeah, sure. So I've been playing since like 1997, was mostly limited player up until, I don't know, like 2015. And then a coworker got me into the Seattle Legacy scene, which, as everybody knows, is really awesome. And it was kind of a fun start. They handed me almost entirely alpha black bordered Alluren deck. So, you know, this is whatever like UCs are worth in 2015. Some betas, but like fully black border lands. And didn't tell me how much it was worth. They just said shuffle it carefully. So I'm sitting down across us from like the Seattle fixture Barb, who's you know, like a fairly well-respected physician. You know, she works on some like interesting psychiatry stuff, was playing Fish at the time. And, you know, I go turn one UC and Barb stops and goes, holy shit, is that an alpha underground scene? and, you know, we're like talking about it and I'm realizing this person just handed me like a low-end sports car. And I had a really fun time that day. You know, Lauren's an interesting deck. Kind of got into the format through that. And I've been playing Legacy, mostly in locals, a little bit on MitGo sense, and really, really enjoying it. It's a great format and great community.
Shoutouts to Barb too. I've definitely played her a couple times.
Yeah, Barb's a real community fixture. She has a good moto awesome. Handle. Granny payback.
Well, I'll keep an eye out for that when if I come across her. That's awesome. So you said you started in '97. What set comes to mind when you think that?
Oh man. Yeah, I'm not it all kind of blurs together because I was a tiny human, you know, but I feel like I bought a really large number of Homelands boosters because one of the local card shops had them for like 25 cents each, and I was like, sweet, Magic. And I can tell you for sure there are a total of zero good cards I have in my collection from that.
Hey, we were just perusing the Margaret Organ Keen art, and there's lot of Homelands in there. So there's I'm sure you're getting some nostalgia.
It was a real
sticker. Yeah, I definitely. You're like, oh yeah, daughter of Autumn Willow, sweet. Yep. Or yep. Daughter of Autumn or whatever it was.
I think that set actually led to like a significant decrease in people playing Magic. Like the curve of active players dropped because people disliked Homelands so much.
Yeah, it was almost like the Ragavan of Magic sets. But we'll get into
not at all. But not at
all. Well, and especially because it came on the heels of Fallen Empires, which I'm pretty sure was pretty poorly received.
This is like a 1-2 punch, right? If you hated Fallen Empires, you're going to hate Homelands.
Well, and like the best card in Fallen Empires was like Hymn to Turok. And I remember we were like, I bought so much Fallen Empires as a kid. And then you like someone hymns you and you're like, sucks. And that's like the best card.
Dude, Goblin Grenade is right there.
Yeah, not when it gets randomly plucked out of your hand.
Breeding Pool to go with your Lord of the Pit is clearly the best thing. So was that really like, were you just hooked after that? Or like when you were given the sports car and they said, go take it around to the track a couple times and keep it under 120, like you were just hooked on Legacy after that? Or was there like a particular thing that drew you to it?
Yeah, you know, the deck part was kind of fun, but like I myself actually buy fairly low. I like have ugly white border duels, etc. It's the community. I played a lot of board games, a lot of them competitively. And I can say like, especially the Seattle Legacy community is one of the better ones I've played in. You know, people are usually pretty grounded. They're friendly. It's got a good mix of like folks play to win, but there's still like a generally casual atmosphere in terms of how they interact with each other. Like a lot of mutual respect and maturity. Which is not true for a lot of board game communities. I don't know if you guys are very different flavors.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Oh, well, you know, like, so like I played chess growing up, and it's just kind of dysfunctional. It's not a positive spiel, but like you go to the Seattle Chess Club or something and people just play their match and then they like don't interact after that. It's, or like a popper tournament. Mm. Here's a great example. So we were doing drafts at Mox on Friday, and a group of parents realized that they could go out and have drinks in Ballard and draw straws and put, like, I kid you not, 14, 11-year-olds in the draft. And one of them who drew the first straw would have to tend the spawn.
Oh my God.
We were doing that. And, you know, you're playing against an 11-year-old and there's like these lose-lose situations. Like they're clearly cheating. And you need to make a decision. Like you need to look inwards and decide how much do you want to win this match? There's no good option here. So there's experiences like that as a limited player. And then, you know, Legacy community, mostly adults, some high schoolers. People are pretty friendly. It's a cool vibe. So that's even just within Magic, but it's kind of the same everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking the worst people I've encountered at a Legacy tournament in Seattle usually rode down in the car with me.
That's our experience as well.
I was just gonna say our friends.
Gotta keep that Canadian invasion out.
I was really wondering where you're gonna go with that, and then I was not disappointed.
I'll tell you guys now, we had a thing we wanted to do that we're not going to get to do in Canlander before Oracle was sufficiently pointed, which was to show up to one of the local Canlander events entirely running Oracle, and then get like the bald eagle sleeves. So the whole deck is like, we're coming north of the border. But it's, I don't think it's ever going to happen now. We'll have to wait till something is similarly broken.
I've always wanted to do that in the other direction, going down to Seattle and just either show up, but it, like just show up with some degenerate combo deck, like either like all Belcher or like all Reanimator or something like that. And just like, you know, 20% of the metagame is Belcher.
It's Belcher Appreciation Month.
Yeah. How, like, yeah, that would be fantastic. So Belcher and Alurin aside, is there like a preferred flavor or actual specific deck that you have?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So the first deck I bought was Shardless Bug. I, you know, as a limited player, I kind of like grindy control decks, would generally try to draft those or play sealed with them. And it was just kind of the right play style. And I like consistency. I kind of like both players to get to play the game. Like, that's the style of game I'm looking for. Like, very interactive. Both people execute their plan. There's lots of decisions. It's like high test. So I got Shardless Bug, which, you know, it's got the him thing going, but it's, at the time it was a pretty, like circa 2015, it was a pretty fair deck in the scheme of things. And I've pretty much played mid-range and mid-range control since. I play a lot of things as like one-offs, but more just, you know, when you like go out of your range so that you don't get too stuck. But if I'm trying to win or just trying to have fun and I'm not trying to learn, I'll pretty much only play mid-range control or control.
What's your favorite Legacy deck of all time? Like, what's the deck in the time period?
Oh, man. There's a pet deck that was kind of the inception of the... It was like two versions of the deck from Eternal Weekend. It was like a meme in our testing group that I wanted to play GSC with Brainstorm, like way before it was a reasonable thing to do. And I would keep forcing it and losing. And everybody, you know, we'd be going out for drinks and they'd be like, oh, Tim's going on about GSC for green creatures again. Like Goyf. Right after MH1 came out, I suddenly started winning with this for the first time ever in a 60 card deck. I think there's some 5-0s posted with it. And it was like Quaddle, GSC, Renin 6/5 color. And I thought I'd figured it out. I was like, I'm a genius. You know, Greenstone Zenith is good. I figured it out. And about 3 weeks later, I just started constantly losing. And what I realized was my deck was awful, but Renin 6 is really good. And I had just like bumbled my way into running Renin 6 before people figured that out. And then didn't even correctly identify that this was the thing that was working. But that's got to be my favorite Legacy deck of all time.
That's awesome. I think that too, I remember like running Renin 6 and like Infect online and someone being like, doesn't really fit with Infect's game plan. I'm like, no, it's just Renin 6.
But it works.
Good enough. Yeah. Moving forward, again, speaking of, this is, I guess, a good transition. Speaking of Green Sun Zenith and making that work in a post Renin 6 era, where I think you've got probably some more targets that you can tutor up. Tell us about this deck. Again, congratulations on an incredible finish in Eternal Weekend. But I think the results speak for themselves. It's now come together and Green Sun Zenith and Brainstorm have found a home. So like, what was it like kind of putting this together and what made you kind of want to play it for Eternal Weekend?
Yeah. It's kind of a long story. You know, we ran basically the same deck in the Oko era at Eternal Weekend last year. And it was a little more off the radar, but I think it was actually better than this deck. It was in the like Oko Astrolabe Arcanist era. And we were running we didn't have access to Prismatic Ending. We were running Abrupt Decays instead and like Drown in the Lock. But it the deck was posting like north of an 80% win rate for us, which is pretty unusual. Wow. Yeah. It was just really, really good against Arcanist Delver, because it had a lot of unconditional removal like Decay and played Oko better. And then it just crushed all the fair Oko decks because it went so much bigger. This was like after Yorion was printed. So we were playing a lot of Yorion decks back then. And at the time we had a bit of interface with Kauf J, who was the guy who posted the list that I think has now become fairly popular. Like, his build is the base that everybody else is working off of. So at that time, our main contribution to the archetype was figuring out the primetime package. I think there's a Reddit thread where we talked to Kauf J about it, and he's like, oh, I'll try that. And it's really good. So kind of fast forward through COVID, we're doing a lot of streams. We're playing a whole lot of Yorion with GSE and various other flavors of bad things. And we're just getting ready for Eternal Weekend, kind of looked through all the options. I'll kind of cut this one short because there's like, I could talk about how we tested for like 5 or 10 minutes. I'll let you guys drive. but it tested really well. It was beating Delver consistently. and not just like close beating, but just absolutely annihilating with a little bit of tuning. And this is, everybody's complaining about Delver, like very smart, skilled players like JPA and Ozymandias are writing about, oh, you should just play Delver. People are posting memes that are like, you know, I'll fix your deck list for you. And then you post your deck list and they just post the red Delver. So the community kind of had the hive mind was in one place, but I don't think this particular deck was quite on the radar. So we're testing it. And it's just absolutely slaughtering most of the top decks that are fair. And so you kind of put your theory together and you're like, okay, winner's meta has Delver, stuff that beats Delver. Most of those things are fair decks. We beat both of those. So as long as Delver can keep combo out, this thing should just glide, which we tested a lot of things. We decided that would be the bet we took, and that's where we ended up, basically. And there were a couple folks running this deck.
How'd the rest of them do?
So Travis Hoberlaw did all right. He went 6-3. He wasn't running this list. He was running like kind of a spicier, like Ragavan four color deck. He's got some 5-0s posted with it. It's pretty spicy. It's like Spellseeker Ragavan.
Spellseeker.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a fun deck. I think Durward was actually running this and did decently. I think he also went X3. And then I talked Greg Mitchell, a Seattle staple player, out of running the deck because Greg usually loses when he plays new decks and the deck is kind of hard to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did really badly on Delver.
I was going to say, what did you convince him to go into? You did the meme and you like, here's your deck pick of blue red Delver.
Yeah. It was like, we set up for like a 2000s era land in Travis's basement. And I convinced Greg to not play the good deck that we had tested. And then everyone who played the deck did well.
Wow. True friendship.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And then I forget the pilot, but in the Sunday main event, somebody else top eighted with the list, which I think is one of the things that got people looking at it more. There was, I think, sixth place also was basically like 76 of the same 80 card main deck.
Hershey.
That sounds about right.
Wow. So, like, I mean, looking at this and kind of thinking like where it came from, if you start looking through the list, it really feels like that kind of Bant Loam control that kind of popped up a little bit. Was that Brian Koval was playing that for some tournament? It's like you drop the, you know, the Abundant Growth and stuff, but it's the core.
You're missing
the good Bant cards.
But you're missing the key thing, isn't it? The Green Sun Zenith. Like,
it's true.
The magic.
We're going way back to 2015 and Tim like trying to jam his shitty Green Sun Zenith into everything. Like, I think that's what really sets this deck apart.
Definitely,
yeah, the Green Sun Zenith package.
Koval's deck's like, it's got Loam to like get Rebuy Wasteland and Rebuy Saga, and this is like no sagas because you're playing real creatures, and you get to tutor up whichever one you need.
Respectable.
Yeah, like in the good old days, you had to think about a green creature that you could put in your deck.
The good old days of Cube, when you just pay Green Sun for like 5, you're like, oh, that 3-drop, that's what I wanted.
And that's how we got here. Like, playing in the Cube, we're like, clearly this has to be good in Legacy.
I mean, it's a shuffle, it's so good.
Yeah.
Brainstorm, put back your Dryad Arbor, Green Sun for 0, like, that's just great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, if they printed a card that does what Green Sun does in this deck, everyone would be super salty about it. Like, it's, you know, it's like a split card, right? And it just has this giant wall of text. Like, this is Dryad Arbor. This is Iceman Quaddle. This is Leopold. This is Uro. This is, because people would be so mad.
That's like the alchemy version. It's like, if X is 1, create a Birds of Paradise. If X is 2, create. Yeah.
They're going to print a card like that, and everyone's going to look at it and finally be like, oh, it's just Green Sun.
Yeah.
Except it probably won't shuffle back in, so it'll be worse.
Yeah, so, yeah, the shuffling, it's really a pretty amazing card. Like, your threat density goes up as the game goes longer, you get flexibility, you get gas. The floor of being like Llanowar Elves is a pretty high floor.
And I mean, kind of being an 80 card deck, you obviously lose a lot of redundancy, but for you're playing 4 copies of, you know, something that itself is redundant because you find the pieces that you need, so you can just pull out those 1-ofs or 2-ofs or if you have to, and it also shuffles to kind of get a deeper density than like anything else would in the deck. it's a really good way to try to counteract the extra 20 cards.
Yeah, it's really like a peanut butter and jelly situation with Yorion. There's such a payoff to Yorion, you know, like starting up an eighth card is so intrinsically unfair. And there's not really that much downside given how many redundant pieces have been printed into the format, except that your sideboard is really, really thinned out. So exactly like you're saying, adding that missing consistency is a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And then you get to have an eight card hand every game.
And I mean, even just the vanilla 4-5 flyer does a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yes, it does.
It really does.
So I want to ask, like, what are some of the key interactions or like really unique aspects of this deck? You were just touching on one with the fact around Green Sun and the tension with the consistency and the size of the deck. And we were just getting into Yorion, like, and I'm observing and remembering the Caracases in this deck. Like, are there any, like, maybe particular four or five that you just like every time you get into those situations, you're just like, this is magic. Like,
I mean, the easiest one is just getting prime time is a lot of fun. You know, this is a cute play. Like, it's a lot better than it looks, and it looks pretty good. But getting like a field and a wasteland or a Caracas is so insane because you get immediately a 6/6 trampler. You get four more power of zombies, at least. You know, you can go get a fetch land and get more. And also you're in a deck that can tap out 9 or 10 mana for 3 or 4 turns in a row. Like with Yorion, you don't actually run out of cards if you want. So like they answer the prime time, they answer the field, but you've got a Caracas and a Yorion left over, and now you're drawing like 4 cards a turn. So it's pretty, the late game is pretty nutty if you ever get to resolve a GSC. And yeah, they can counter it, but you have so much redundancy on your threat suite. Like this is the main interaction. It's probably the best Mud at the Wall deck I've ever played. Where you, it's a great plan against Delver, right? Like you just disrespect Daze, you tap out over and over, you know, you deploy 2 removal spells a turn, and you just do that until they run out of gas, and then you have still 2 or 3 more pieces of things. And like that interaction is probably the defining one of like, you have just this crazy level of threat density, and your threats accelerate the longer the game goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very, very, like, it's not really one card, although if it was one card, it would be Primeval Titan or Uro. But the pieces of the deck working together are very good at deploying a lot of threats in a way that is, like, a little stronger than it looks if you just look at the list. Like, in the Miracles chat, somebody was asking, like, why is this deck so good against D&T? It has the same tools as Miracles. And I think what they were missing is that it has that, but in any given game, there's 3 more of them. And also, the top end is much stronger. You know, this mm-hmm. isn't like Shark Typhoon, maybe get it if you can online, or like, you know, play your Uro and they kill it. It's that, and then you go up to 10 lands and make a billion power and start recurring a Yorion.
It's really like the big schoolyard bully of Legacy decks. Like, yep. It's just brutal. And the fact that, and the little one outs that you're totally fine with them being like less than a one of in your 80 card deck, because you're like, I'll get them when I need it. And when I get it, you'll be sorry.
Yeah, the bullets are amazing.
I gotta ask about one bullet, because there's, unlike the rest of them, you know, Night of Autumn, Leovold, Primetime, whatever, you can't find the Snapcaster Mage. Is that just like, you know, Snapcaster rules, so of course I want to have it on my deck because Snapcastering something's great and I don't care when it happens? Or is there like any more science behind that?
There's a lot of science. Nobody else did this either. So we were testing the deck a bunch, and it was beating Delver, but not like, you know, slam the book shut.
Mm.
So probably like 65-35, like it feels favored, but sometimes they make a big Murktide, or they make 2 Murktides and they have a force for your third Swords effect. So that's kind of the fundamental deck. They're usually losing. Regaban doesn't actually have that many hits against this deck. So it's a problem, but you can often let the Regaban just hit you for a while. And yeah, they get like an abundant growth or whatever, but you're capable of generating enough card advantage to ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
So the real problem is Murktide. And you just have to deal with it. So you want to do that while not compromising your other matchups too much. And the deck is set up okay to do this. You know, Grist was a huge addition. being able to turn the GSCs into a fairly consistent answer to a big threat is a big deal and not something the deck had before. But there's still not quite enough because Delver is so efficient. So we were looking at Kaufjay's build, which had preordains, and I forget what else. Like, it was some third card that wasn't the most relevant. And we realized, really, we're only losing to Murktide. And so there's this, I did a write-up for the weekend, but there's like a long list of like 8 different things we tried to deal with Murktide. And it's surprisingly difficult. Like, Murktide's a hell of a card. But one of them is having more swords effects, and Snap is just the least shitty of that. We looked at like all of them: Stinger Fling Spiders, Crawl Harpooners, Eternal Witness we tried. And Snap is kind of in the sweet spot of like, it's fast enough, but it could be a lot of things. It could be like a Path to Exile. It could be an Eternal Witness.
I guess Witness is probably the closest, right? Because it's kind of like a 1 mana more Snap that you can actually find. But I mean, Snapcaster being like the 4.5th card of these is pretty good, because you can draw it whenever. And yeah, it's not like it's a particular thing. It's just, oh, it's a Swords now, or oh, it's a Ponder now. And did you ever get to Yori on the Snapcaster?
Yes. It's very satisfying. Yeah. It happens a lot. Because you pretty consistently get into a situation in the late game against Delver where you have a lot of lands.
That's awesome.
It's very sad. But it could be something else. It's not essential that it's Snap. It needs to be an answer to Murktide, basically. Mm-hmm. And Snap just has the property of being relevant against combo.
I just shake my head at this deck list. It's just terrifying. And like, just like ramming up Excavator, like, of course they have that. Like, why not? Just, yeah. So primary ways that you win, is it that you just, do you generally just go to the long game and set up some crazy prime time into big stuff or a big Yorion turn, and that's generally it?
There's a lot of paths that usually end at that like terminal state. But there's one, sometimes you just get like the nut tempo draw. So this looks like you have Forces, you have an Arbor and an Uro, and you have some Wastelands. And sometimes you just run people over. Like, you deploy a turn one Arbor, you go turn two Uro, play a Wasteland, waste you, force your thing. Next turn, deploy Uro. It's pretty, just like the game is gross. Over. Yeah. That doesn't happen too much, but you can kind of imagine, like, that's the pure nut of, like, countering multiple things, wasting them off their mana, deploying a fast Uro. But there's things that kind of look like that. Like, you get to Swords, they're more expensive thing. So that's one path, is like, you just accelerate. Like, Uro, you guys have seen this a lot of times. Uro will often do this kind of like accidental oops, I win situation, mm-hmm. where you're like trading back and forth counters and answers, but Uro is putting you up lands. And then you just start casting 2 spells a turn. They're only casting 1. And it's almost irrelevant how many cards you each have. You've just gotten so far ahead that there's nothing they can do. So that's one path. The bullet, as you kind of alluded to, the bullet win sometimes happens. So some of the bullets are like very awkward for certain decks to deal with, like Remunak or Leovold. So sometimes you just like hit them at the wrong time. And the great thing about GSC is you control the timing. So like, sometimes they'll miss a land drop and you just like Remunak, waste, and the game is over. So there's some tell that they don't have removal. Like, your Arbor or your Birds has survived and you get a Leovold and it just like bricks their entire deck. And then the most common pathway is just like, you make a big prime time and go over their board. So you haven't actually answered everything they're doing, but it goes so big, it doesn't matter. This is kind of the mid-range win. And then there's like a pure control win of, you know, you're both getting low on resources. You're trading things back and forth. Maybe you had to use your GSCs. You don't have a prime time, but you just have more cards than them due to Yorion, and then you win that way. So there's a lot of pathways, but the mid-range win of like go big with prime time or the hard control win with Yorion are the most common.
So you mentioned like some of the good matchups, saying that it's like favorable matchup against Delver, which obviously in like the current state of Legacy is great. But what are some of the other good matchups? And then you kind of mentioned you kind of rely on Delver eating a lot of the combo matchups. And so what are some of the other bad matchups?
Yeah. So pretty much everything that is fair is pretty good, with like one exception that it'd be interesting to talk to Brendan about. I might have this one wrong. I had thought lands wasn't a good matchup, but I'm coming around. All the other pilots of the deck seem to think lands is a pretty good matchup. But yeah, like Delver, D&T, any kind of control, any kind of fair non-blue like Maverick, or like the kind of loamy prison decks. Prison decks are very weak against it. You don't see them much anymore because they're so bad against Prismatic Ending, but when you do occasionally hit them, it's a pretty easy. Your mana base is pretty tight. You're basically just a pure band deck, and you have like redundant answers to lock pieces. So you're not overly worried about like Chalice or whatever. Like you often just let Chalice go because you can ignore it for three or four turns and then deal with it. And Blood Moon isn't that big of an issue if it's slowed down at all. So yeah, basically anything that's fair is pretty good. You just have the tools to grind the deck out and interact. And then anything that's unfair is pretty bad for the most part.
I'll just say the part about lands, like I think it comes back to how lands is like what it's aiming for.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as like lands used to be able to put up like when Miracles was a thing or some of the Oko Snowco decks were a thing, it's like, but you had to have a very specific game plan for those decks. And definitely a number of weeks ago, like it was not really on a lot of lands players' radars. And when you don't have the right tools, like again, like getting your own fields active and things like that, where you can just kind of go wide and just curate this consistent pressure or get Valakut exploration going. But a lot of lands players started to like take out the exploration, like the Valakut explorations, or just put them into the side. And you're not really overwhelming the Prismatic Endings and like things like that. And then you just can't grind as hard and then you're going to fall apart. But so it definitely comes back to like the deck construction, but I'm going to echo your part about if it plays Lotus Petal, you're probably, or Dark Ritual, you're probably in trouble. That's my metric always with lands.
Yeah. I think I had the lands matchup wrong. I'd lost a couple matches in testing early when they had an active exploration from like just getting Saga out and then doing like the stage Saga trick. And so I prioritized, I was kind of thinking, okay, well, they have like four exploration and they have between 6 and 8 loam and Valakut explorations. So in theory, you want to like deal with the exploration and just try to outgrind the gas. And if you can constrain them to only one land a turn, it'll work. So I was tending to force exploration. The other pilots of the deck don't like that. And they think the lands matchup is better. They like to deal with the gas piece.
Yeah.
So I think I might have just misprioritized it.
I'd agree with the other players. I was actually playing friend of the show, Chad, a while back over webcam, and he did exactly that. He started aggressively forcing my explorations. And I was like, those don't matter. Like once I get a gas piece or like an engine online, I'm just going to keep doing that.
Yeah.
And that'll let me continue to pull enough ahead. But I think you're using almost like the 2016 metric of like, cut off the acceleration rather than the grindy pieces, when back then it used to just be loam as like your only real way to go, which obviously favorably interacts with the exploration. Whereas now there's just so many other options. But yeah, definitely like when I work super hard to get the Valakut exploration in play and then they're just like, oh, Prismatic Ending. Oh, cast Life from the Loam. Oh, I'm going to force negation that. You're just like, okay, never mind. This game's over. I can have all the explorations I want, but there's nothing happening with them.
Force of Negation does seem like specifically somebody was just really mad about Loam.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, like it doesn't even hit anything else that hard. It really hits Loam.
When you get hit by Loam, especially game one, when you know it's only like a one or a two of, and they just like turn to Force Negation suddenly, you're like, oh. Feels really bad. Yeah. So bad matchups, like, is there any particular ones that are just atrocious?
Yeah.
That are like more popular?
Yeah. Well, so the biggest problems are the ones that are bad for us and good against Delver. So elves and 8-cast come to mind. Like this is kind of off. Like the narrative is Delver will keep these decks out of the winner's meta and will just play against Delver, D&T, and control. 8-cast and elves flip the script. Like elves did really well at the Friday Eternal Weekend event, a little less well on the Sunday one. But, you know, it's well positioned, like it does beat Delver. So those matchups are pretty rough. Elves is really difficult. It looks like it might be fine because you have removal and the right tools, but just the way it plays out, they're a little too fast. Like you deploy cantrips and one removal spell a turn, they're deploying two things, and most of the time you can't keep up and they get ahead of you. So, you know, it's probably like 30-70. It's a rough matchup. Like, you can win it, you can cast a Plague Engineer, but most of the time that's not happening. Eight cast is also pretty bad. You have a little better tools there, like Oofs shuts off most of their deck. But the way things actually play out, they don't have to force that many things you're doing because they're so fast. So if they know what they're doing, they'll tend to like just keep you off the hate piece and ignore everything else and go wider than you can. So those are probably the two most problematic matchups. The worst matchup is Doomsday. Doomsday is like almost unwinnable. This is the big sacrifice of playing an 80 card deck. You just don't have the sideboard slots and Doomsday is so efficient now. It's just an insanely strong deck. I think we'd all be complaining about Doomsday if Regavant wasn't in the format. Regavant's really good against Doomsday.
Fired up some Ant leagues like in the lead up to Eternal Weekend, not thinking I was going to play Ant, but just to be like, you know, for all time's sake. And yeah, like, you know, Regavant hitting you and being like, oh, that's tendrils, I guess I'm dead, doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
But just playing against Doomsday and being like, well, we're both combo decks and like, you have a Force of Will and you really just need one card. Like, holy shit, this feels bad.
And their shell is so adaptive. Like, they have a lot of slack slots in there. They can do things like run Veil. They can splash red and run Pyroblast. You know, fundamentally, they have a one card combo that kills you pretty fast now. And so there's just so much room in that shell for acceleration and disruption and so much flexibility. It's a pretty scary deck, but Regavant is insane.
I think a couple months ago we shouted out, I can't remember which player was on it, but they were playing like a 65 card Doomsday, like actual pile. And it was just like all the garbage slots and they like 5-0'd with it. And it was just to kind of like promote that of like, look how bad this deck can be as long as you know what you're doing. But yeah, your point is well taken about Doomsday, where it's kind of like this really, Oracle's insane.
Yeah.
And it's just a really strong package that gets to play a lot of hand disruption and counter magic, that gets to choose its timing when it wants to do its thing. And yeah, there's definitely potential for the genie to come out of the bottle with that, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. I think especially now with the consider deep analysis lines, where before they had lines that were hard to disrupt and they had lines that were kind of fast, but they didn't have like a consistent fast line. And now if they want to go shields down, they can go really fast, which is a new axis for the deck. And, you know, like you're saying, they get to pick which they go for and when. So just that option existing in their range has made the deck a lot more threatening than it used to be. But it really can't beat Regavant consistently.
Well, and the finalist, I guess, for the Sunday event, pretty sure it's the Sunday event, where like you look at all their matchups for the entire day, and they just, I think they dodged Delver except for once throughout the whole event. And that was their plan. Like they said, their plan was like, I'm going to dodge Delver and I'm going to win. And that's exactly what you have to do.
The top eight was brilliant. Like if you looked at it, you're like, oh, Blue Zenith is going to win this event. Like there's two pilots on it. You know, it's mostly Delver. And then the pairings transpire such that the Doomsday player eliminates both of them and then loses to Delver in the finals. So it's like, here you go, Delver. It happens, you know. But yeah, that's like, it was just Blue Zenith, quarterfinals, semifinals for Neville Shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, things just worked out. Things definitely worked out well for them in terms of all their pairings and matchups. So that's a good transition in terms of like your Eternal Weekend. We're obviously sitting here talking about your top eight. Did you play in just the Sunday event or did you play in others?
Oh yeah. We played Friday night. That was where we kind of did the land setup and we missed a win in round eight of that event against a pretty wild, I guess it wasn't actually a win in, but it probably would have been on breaks. The event was a bit smaller, but we got eliminated in round eight. It was, I don't know if you guys saw it. It was that crazy Oracle deck, Orim's Chant. So it's the guy who's running 67 cards in his main deck and 12 in the board. He's running.
I heard of this.
It's CFT Sock 3. It's just a wild deck. He's running three main deck Carpet of Flowers. And it's just like an Eternal Witness Spellseeker Ephemerate deck. So he's just trying to get multiple Ephemerates looping and then Orym's Chant you in your upkeep with like redundant counters up.
Jeff's face is.
This is like Jeff's like.
How did I not see this?
Didn't we point it out? It got like 18th place or something, didn't it?
Yeah, it did really well.
Went over the Orym's Chant. Oh my! Why are God accounts over?
It was a wild deck. Like I'd never seen anything like it before.
He has some explanation for the sideboard. I need to find it and understand. But there's some rational basis for why you should run a 12 card sideboard.
Everbrush Caretaker.
Your main deck has to be at least as large as what you registered, right? So even if you run a 12 card sideboard, you can't start with like 65 cards.
And then I think
62, right?
This came up on, I think it was.
I feel like we talked about this on Eternal. The cast.
Callum and Julian talked about it, and at least I'm not misremembering, but you can, I think you have to register 60 at a minimum. So you can actually like increase the size of your sideboard and decrease the size of your deck.
But your sideboards can't be more than 15 cards. So if you have 12 cards and a 67 card main deck, you can trim down to 64.
Yeah.
A nice round 64.
Does that work if your registered sideboard is less than 15? I feel like it would be your registered sideboard number, but I don't know.
I mean, that seems like the most
likely. There needs to be like a pin reasonable tweet to explanation. This where like when everyone gets into this conversation, they just, oh yeah, refer to that because it clarifies it there and their reasoning. But yeah, there was something to say that like, my takeaway, I can't remember exactly what it was, but like, surely it can't do X. And the answer was yes, it can do X. I can't remember exactly what it was, but that was the takeaway. But the person who did it had some rationale of like, here's why I wanted to have all these cards for these options. And then if I played, I think it was like a grindier matchup or something like that, then they would be like, then I'll go down and board down to.
Well, I guess if you're playing three carpets, right, you want to be able to just like pluck those out.
The matchup where kind of Piracy Charm's not good. Yeah. You gotta-
Like it's basically like playing a one of Snapcaster in a deck that can't search for it, but
I think it's the same thing. It's the same principle.
Yeah. Anyway, you should go look it up again, Jeff, because it's exactly everything you like in Magic and more.
Bookmarking this page.
Yeah, it's a wild deck, and he was on the same idea as us. Like beat Delver, he just committed to it like so hard. Three main deck carpet is pretty committed. So we lost to that guy, and then. We lost to Doomsday in round one. We were joking about it before the event where we're like, oh, we'll just dodge Doomsday. And two people on the team, Travis and Greg, were like, no, that's not going to happen. You're just going to get paired against them round one. And then we got paired against like probably the best known vintage Doomsday grinder in the first round. It just lost like 0-2 or something. So that was Friday. Got 20th at the event, which felt pretty good. Lost to the crazy Orym's Chant and the Doomsday decks. And beat a bunch of fair stuff, mostly a bunch of like D&T and Delver. So kind of according to plan, just not quite the pairings that we needed.
And were you the best performing player of the team in both events that you guys played in then?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Travis went 6-3 and I played against Kelvin Wallace, who had prepped with us in the last round of Friday, actually. So we got the team kill. So I guess he also went 6-3.
Kelvin was actually Calvin. He would he played webcam with us for a while when we only had webcam legacy. But he's in Toronto in USA. He was talking about he was like, oh yeah, like I test with some of the guys in Seattle. I'm like, oh, like who? And he's like, oh, like you know, like do you know Tim? And I'm like, oh yeah. So it's like a flu stew of some sort. He's like, oh yeah. Those decks.
So in terms of the future of the metagame, like I think this blue zenith deck is really well positioned right now. To just beat up on things. There's a lot of clamoring. There's like three or four different camps of the Legacy community all clamoring for something different, but they're all collectively clamoring for something different. Where do you see this thing going if any of these kind of potential futures materialize? Do you think it'll be able to adapt and be resilient, or do you think there are going to be like too many Dark Ritual decks that come out of the woodworks?
I think the shell can work. It's kind of the nature of mid-range control that you need to establish metagame to target. And you can usually tune to beat something. But the thing about Yorion is, like, it's just not, if there's a lot of combo, it's the wrong thing to be doing usually. Because you're making a trade with the deck choice of, I'm going to be grindier, but in exchange, I'm going to have a small sideboard. And so any matchup where the sideboard matters, that's usually not a good trade. So I think, like, the future, if we move into a more combo-oriented meta, is probably that this is, like, you know, a tier 2.5 metagame choice, where people will sometimes bring it out of the box as, like, a gotcha. But it really, you can definitely tune it to have good combo matchups, or, like, different, like the JTL style stuff, where he's running, like, a blue Yorion flicker deck. You can run the, like, we tried a very large number of Yorion shells, and there's some that have, like, four main deck meddling mage, and they're just grindy enough that they can fight fair despite the downside of, like, main deck hate bears. So you can totally do it, but my suspicion is you want to kind of be on, like, a 60 card deck if combo is prevalent and that's what you're trying to beat.
Is there any thought in, like, kind of adapting the Yorion DNT sideboard mentality of, like, well, every single card in the sideboard is to deal with combo?
Yeah, you can basically take that even to the main deck, and you get enough margin with Yorion that you can afford to give up a lot of points against fair. So I think you could run, like, a 15 card combo sideboard, and then also, like, four or five main deck cards that are not good against fair. Mm-hmm. Like, you could go up to, like, four Force of Neg, run main deck Lavinias and Meddling Mages, and probably still have decent fair matchups. Not as good. But you're probably still worse than, like, whatever Delver Shell is legal against combo.
I guess right. At some point, too, you kind of run into the, like, is it worth shoring up a few percentage points against these combo decks by making everything else worse, or just, you know, stomping all over the things you're good at and dodging the Doomsday?
Yep. you could definitely make it better, but I think if Doomsday is your primary concern, you probably just play a different deck.
That's fair.
But that's, like, this weird paradox, because every player who's not playing Doomsday is like, I just don't want to play against Doomsday. Like, it's the thing that I don't want to play.
Yep.
Except for Delver. But
yeah, and they have a terrible Delver matchup, like 30% or something. I do think that it's unlikely enough pieces are banned from Delver that it's not still good. Like, the list of cards that are excellent is so deep. Like, they're not even running True Name. They're not running YP. They're not running Delver. So you could, you know, like, people talk about it a lot. I think a reasonable banning might be, like, EI and Ragavan. The deck would still be phenomenal and mm-hmm. probably still just dumpster Doomsday.
Which I think is okay.
Yeah.
And I don't, I mean, I rarely play Delver. But I'm not a person who was like, fuck Delver, you know, like, it's just like Delver exists and that's the deck. And then you try and dodge Delver, you have a strategy to beat Delver, but it's just like a little too much right now.
Ragavan's also kind of an upsetting card. Like, you know, give me your cards. I'm going to play them.
It's not that fun.
Yeah.
Which is funny to say about a deck that, like, bashes you with a 3/2 after on, like, turn two. I'm like, that's fine. I can deal with that. Yeah.
I think there's a fun way to do it. Like, if you look at Grenzo, like, you know, the red 2/2, where it's like when you hit somebody, you get to goad or exile the top card of your deck and you can play it. It's like you have to pay, you know, full retail for the spells. It's like, sure, you can hit a few things, but, like, it kind of does one or the other thing at a higher cost. And, like, if somebody hits you with a Grenzo and, you know, then they spent their hard-earned mana to, like, plow your thing, you're like, all right, fuck, that's sick. But when you have this stupid monkey that comes in or comes in with haste, you know, takes the card, gets the mana, saves the mana for later if it wants to, like, it's just, it's too many things, man.
It's just a different way. I think you're right. It's, like, just upsetting sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, like, like Stifle Days is getting upsetting in a different way, where I'm upset because I did this to myself at some point, you know, like I just like looked and fetched like during my main phase
Thursday.
Oh, that was like there was no way around that one. That happens too, but that's fine.
So
double Stifle. Like,
our whole legacy scene is pretty light on reg events. Like generally it's just like we don't talk about that card around here.
And gentleman's honor in Canada.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple of people show up and it's fine, but like it was to like the nth degree last Thursday where a fellow by the name of Kevin showed up and he was playing mono blue Delver with like Stifles and True Names and
Terramander.
Yeah. He even had two Curious Obsession. Curious Obsession. Yeah, he had the Eternal Forager and he 4-0'd.
Yeah. Crushed everyone. That's what I'm saying, though. You could add like four cards for that deck and it's there's still Terramander, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And like the Modern Horizons gave it like 16, like four new playable cards that are all 4-ups in the deck. Like it's not hurting. So. But it'll be interesting to see, like, there were so many cards that kind of were released into the wild on Modern Horizons 2. And there's been this real focal point on Ragavan. Largely, I think, is around that kind of feel-bads component of it. But it's going to be, like, if that, in fact, does go in some way, it'll be interesting to see, like, all these other cards. Like, I'm thinking of, like, Prismatic Ending, for example. Like when all of your like little threats all of a sudden don't really generate anything and you can just, you as the control player can just be like, I have eight really, 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 really good removal things and four of them don't care what permanent it is. Like it's going to be pretty terrifying to go up against some of those control decks, I have to say. But then we get into that whole combo world of things. But yeah, Prismatic Ending is a hell of a card.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like hiding in the shadows. Like, don't talk about me.
Yeah, like,
the message is being controlled by the.
Yeah, it is, like, especially with cards like Urno. It's kind of homogenizing. Like Urno is unique, as far as I'm aware, in that it's a gas engine that's almost impossible to interact with. You know, you can like surgical it, but that's a pretty good trade for the control pilot.
Right, like any way of dealing with it, you're like, okay. Sick.
Yeah.
Like you counted it? Okay, it's coming back. Oh, you plowed it when the trigger's on this thing? Like, all right, like I got a card. I got fucking 12 life, 9 life. Like, this is fine.
Yeah. The fact that it's an early game do something card and then it's just your late game when I get around to it, I can always have that plan. Yeah. It's a very strong card.
Eternal Dirtles called it like the ultimate Bane Drifter, which I was also like, I don't know what this means, which they explained.
Yep, it is.
But like Maul Drifter and Bane Slayer Angel like stapled together. And it's like, yeah, that makes the tracks.
Yeah, it does a lot. I think the combo decks are so good right now that control probably doesn't run away with a slightly weaker Delver. But it's really hard to predict what would happen. There's like 8 cast elves. Doomsday all are so powerful and proactive and generally not great matchups for control.
And what's crazy in all of this is that D&T is actually a thing on top of all of this. Like, we haven't really mentioned it. It's just kind of, you know, the white deck in the room standing there. But it, like, I've always kind of had the heuristic that any time that D&T is a reasonable deck in a metagame, it's probably a good metagame.
Yeah.
And any time that it's just like D&T is unplayable, it's just like, generally there's like several things that are all on fire and wrong. And not really viable. But
you know, as a D&T player, I'll second that, because anytime the deck's good, it's a great metagame. It's the best metagame it's ever been. Anytime it's bad, get rid of this. Change the metagame right away. I wanted to ask, you know, we've talked about this ourselves so many times, but, you know, Tim, Ian calls you up tomorrow morning and says, Tim, I saw your records. I think you have a smart mind for this. I'm going to defer the next ban list coming soon 100% to you. You know, what changes would you think about making?
Or no changes.
Or no changes.
It's a tough one. I mean, like we've been talking about, I think if you ban Ragavan, Doomsday runs away with the format. The Seattle situation, there's also not really Ragavan players. And there's like three people who bring Doomsday to Mondays, and they just like 3-1 or 4-0 every time because somebody's playing. They're like, yeah, what's the new white creature? Like the
guy Sentinel?
No. Or... Oh yes. But the other one, the guy that sacks artifacts, like he birthing pods, like Fiddlesticks or something.
Oh yeah. Oswald Fiddlebender.
Yeah. If somebody has their fun Oswald Fiddlebender back, and it's just like turn one, Dark Ritual, Doomsday, kill you. Nice deck.
Yeah, what was your opponent playing? I don't know.
I had a daze and a pact, so I didn't have to use either.
They played a Mox Opal? I don't know.
something bad, I don't know. So I think if you get rid of some of the Delver pieces, there's a chance that that's a problem. Like you'd have to look at Doomsday. Like something probably needs to go from that deck.
Sorry to interrupt for a second, but I'm just curious in like a thought experiment. Like if you're trying to like power down Doomsday without killing it, like what's even the choice? It feels like the only thing you could like really choose if you're talking about Doomsday would be like Oracle, but that like destroys it.
Yeah, it goes back to not being... You could take Consider out of the format, which would be a really weird ban.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah. You're like looking at all these other cards, like Sol Ring, Black Lotus.
What do you ban, like Edge of Autumn?
There's got to be some other obscure cycler out there.
Personal Tutor. They don't
even land cycling.
That's an interesting thing. Like, what do you... Other than banning Doomsday or Oracle, like what do you ban?
You could get rid of Cavern of Souls, but too much splash hit to D&T.
Probably. Oh, goblins! Can you imagine if goblins gets murdered like that? That would be so mean.
Yeah,
Just ban Doomsday.
Oh yeah, there you go.
And that way you're not killing Oops.
So Oops can still oh yeah, we must respect Oops. The Oops respecter has logged on. So sorry, I sidetracked you, Tim. But outside of Doomsday running away with the format, you know what else are you thinking?
Oh yeah, so I think like something probably needs to go from Delver. You know, people have made arguments that the match win rate isn't that high, but like it's being targeted by things like, you know, entire teams of people running Yorion Zenith and like hard picking their deck on, I'm going to have better than a 70% win rate against this deck. You know, nobody's going into Eternal Weekend without a Delver plan. And yet,
my opponent was like Valk, DRC. What's happening?
Oh man, that card's good.
Shit. I must be safe to tap out for my spells now. Oh, days? What?
Oh, I'll probably grind them out. It'll be fine. Expressive iteration. It's okay. My creatures are bigger. It'll be fine. My creatures are bigger. I have a bigger creature.
Thank God their biggest flying threat is a 3/3. Oh, no.
Oh, no. So everybody comes in like targeting for the most. You have a couple people like Neville Shoot going the other way with Doomsday, but like most of the meta is targeting Delver, and it's still posting a pretty good win rate, which, you know, it's not quite like Ren and Six Delver, but you know, that combined with how unfun Regaban is, something's probably got to go. But I think it ends up being more like a wing clip. You know, like if you take Expressive Iteration out of the format or Regaban, the deck is still perfectly viable, probably even the best deck. But Delver's fun, like you guys were saying. Like it's an interactive deck. You get good games of Magic with it. It keeps the turn one combo decks out of the format. Or at least you can play them, you know, but nobody wants like the Oops top eight where there's like four Oops all spells.
Right? No one wants one K.
There's going to be someone on Reddit who's like, I would love that.
Yeah. Yeah. The next mocks, we're all going to train under Nathan. He's going to teach us all how to play Oops really well. And we're just going to come down and just crush. But yeah, the Ragavan one is probably the most prominent in people's minds. There's, you know, the Expressive, there's Days, there's a couple other things, but I think we're all on the page of Days as part of what makes Legacy Legacy.
Yeah.
In terms of the interactions and the complexity that it provides. Yeah, we'll see. I have really been enjoying how the format is continuing to evolve. again, like this, the Zenith deck wasn't a thing when MH2 was kind of first released. And everyone's just like, hey, Endurance, like, you know, this is the new hotness. And now it's like really started to evolve and change. So it, there are the cards out there. We are seeing new stuff. Things are innovating. And I like to look at that part. Like there are people who have just been like, they, once they got onto the Ragavan page, they're just like, I no longer have to look at anything or change my mind or anything. I'm just going to hate on Ragavan. But the people have continued to play and enjoyed the format. It's been nice to see, but I could imagine also just, you know, logging on and playing against 5 blue red Delver decks in a row and just going, well, this is awful. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, I think it's overall in a fine spot. Like, people complain about Ragavan more than the card strictly justifies, but it's probably like it's a little bit above the line. And, you know, like, we can keep playing the format and have it be fun. And I think it'll be fine. Not everybody agrees. Like, Anurag's talking about this is like one of the only times he hasn't liked playing Legacy. But you can beat the card. You can construct your deck to beat it and still play good games.
It feels really good when you know it's like, you know, it's going to hit you and you're just like, come at me.
Yeah.
There's like, I could care less what you hit. You have a shitty Savannah Lion for all I care. Like, and I'm just going to make some big things and kill you. So like when you're playing lands, like speaking from the person who lost to Blue Red Delver 3 times in Eternal Weekend, but
oh no.
Yeah.
It didn't. Isn't that matchup recover really good for you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What did you do? Brendan, what did you do?
I should probably go back and look at my games and stuff. Like, I'm sure there was like a couple punts in there or just suboptimal plays, but I on it, like, part of this goes back to the fact that, like I said, like our local scene doesn't really play a lot of spiky blue red Delver.
Oh yeah.
So I didn't get a lot of reps against just like the Gochul of the world who are just running the very best thing and making all the best plays. So I went up against some of that and didn't fare too well, but played quite well against everyone else except for some guy on Zenith, Blue Zenith, who crushed me in 3 games.
Oh man, we got to talk about that match. That was an insane match. So a data point, Brendan and I finished game 1. I believe my moto clock was 8 minutes and Brendan's was like 6:45.
And that's normal for McBain.
It was maybe the most interesting game 1 I've played in a pretty long time on any deck.
There was one key play I think I made against you where I like killed something and then like wastelanded something else and then Bajuka bogged you. So that like you like lost a whole bunch of options. And then we have to go down this like whole other weird galaxy. I can't remember what it was, but that's usually like whenever I'm playing against these really grindy blue decks, Bajuka Bog is usually the card that gets you back into it in some way. Where you cut them off all their engines, their Urs are gone, their Loam's gone, and their eyes just kind of bolt out of their head. They're like, oh my God, what am I going to do?
Yeah, there was definitely a moment like that game 1. I think what made the game so crazy was we bounced engines off each other and were at relative parity. And then at about the same time in the mid game, both of us got our engines fully online. So you were like doing the lands thing and had field active and were making multiple constructs a turn. And I had like Yorion action and 10 lands in play after a Primeval Titan. So the board was just, and there's like a Tabernacle in play and we're both tank Tabernacle triggers on zombies. Cause you need to have zombie parity. It's just an insane board. That was a fun game.
Yeah, it was. And then did we get all 3 games in?
I think I won game 2, but it was like, I think you were under a lot of time pressure.
Yeah, no, I ultimately timed out. Like, I just couldn't put it together. But yeah, it was, they're fun games when you can like get them going. But again, I like generally my experience in those Blue Zenith or like the other kind of blue, big blue decks that are out there, generally they get those like aggressive Uro games a little too much and they'll just get an early force negation off and you're kind of like, ooh, you're really hooped. There's definitely been, watching the lands community anyway, there's definitely been a desire to play more main deck endurance, which kind of shores up some of your combo matchups, but also it's just generally good against Delver, but you're losing a lot of like your grind. And again, the Valakut Exploration is just so good for just drawing obscene amounts of cards. And then they're also not playing Sylvan Libraries and things like that. Like, I think I played against Elliot the other week and I was at like 50 or 60 life just from like making 20/20s. And I was like, man, I could really go for a Sylvan Library right now where you just get to like draw three cards a turn. But yeah, it was, they were fun games. I remember at the end, you messaged, you're just like, my heart rate is like 140 right now.
Oh, this is insane. I was measuring it. I was like,
I also had my Apple Watch go off and I was like, why is it beeping at me? And I looked and it's like, warning, your heart rate is really high. I'm like, good Lord, I'm under so much time pressure.
Tabernacle triggers faster.
Yeah. And I just a final point on this and then we can kind of wrap up here. Like, I didn't realize how slow, like, I knew my laptop was slow, but it's like so slow. Like, I think it was adding like 25% on every action I was taking. My latency was just like clunky. Like, my internet's good. My computer was just not processing the things fast enough. Like, we'd even be like, we'd be hanging out in between rounds. And Jeff's like, hey, the round's posted. Oh, I'm playing against this person. And he starts looking them up. And I'm like, my computer's thinking about something. And then like 20, 30 seconds later, I'm like, oh, I'm playing against this person. I'll go look them up. Like, it was just so slow. So I'm sure there was a number of games where I just like lost 3 or 4 minutes over the course of the game by just taking all these actions and things happening and just the computer clunking along. But as soon as I saw
tournament MVP,
as soon as I was watching Jeff's stream and he was just like clicking along, I'm like, how is this so fast? This is seamless. Like, I want to play this Magic Online.
Professionals restart Magic Online in between every three matches.
Oh my god.
Well-known Mikko players. I actually do. Man, when was that? That was like customer support in 2020. Someone was complaining about how bad Mikko was.
Yeah.
And they just said, you know, restart the client. I do that.
I mean, it works.
Huh.
You mentioned this deck's hard to play, but we've been talking about it, and the more we've talked about it, the more I'm like, oh, this sounds sweet. Let's say you finally convince me to buy Uros. What are some things that I should know? As someone who tends to play pretty loose and also doesn't play a lot of control decks, what should I be focusing on? What should I think about if I'm picking this deck up?
Oh, yeah. So the biggest thing is obviously just how to maximize use of Green Sun. That's the hardest part of the deck because it's such a flexible card. So you'll have a lot of hands where Green Sun can be cast for either 1, 2, or 2 or 3 valid 3 targets. And you'll have things that you can do between turn 1 and 3. And it'll be like an actual choice. And doing that really well is tricky. So the main way, and I think this is true of all decks, but is especially true for this deck, is you want to understand your matchups reasonably well, understand the end games that will occur, and work backward from the end games to the mid games to the early game so that you're able to develop like a cohesive plan. Because the answer to like, is this a situation where I want to like get an Arbor out on turn 1, or, you know, is Quaddle really important, or should I just trade stuff and save this because Uro is the truth, is really like, what is your plan? So I think that's the biggest one of like, play the matchups a bunch and always have like a hypothesis about what my plan is, and then try to falsify it. So like, I've been losing against lands about half the time. I had a theory of like, I need to counter exploration. We were talking about it on this podcast. I'm like talking to other pilots of the deck. I think I was wrong about that and I need to have a different plan. And I think using GSE is largely a function of observations like this. So that's probably the biggest thing. There's a lot of little tips and tricks. I'll tell you the funnest one, which is plan to ambush Viper or Regavan with your fetches. It's very satisfying. You feel like you're getting away with something, but it actually works. Like, you get the core of the deck, the easy part, in Wasteland matchups, you want to get basics, right? And you want to plan an abundant growth probably on the plains because you need to cast Uro. Once you've done that, you can cast everything. So your lands are kind of redundant and sometimes you lose by flooding. So a fun, this isn't really like general good advice for someone picking up the deck, but it's just fun. You just always leave a green fetch up and you make them have the bolt. And like, usually they don't. And it's very, it feels like justice. You know, you're like, die. but yeah, this is true of most decks, but it's a deck that really, really rewards planning. And the sequencing is very not obvious with what to get with GSC and when.
I will say, like I've said this before, but if I don't have a plan of like where I'm trying to get to, or like a few places of where I'm trying to get to, I play like absolute garbage. Like I'll be the guy who's just like, oh, I'm going to green sun for two for this thing. And it's like two turns later, I'm like, that was the worst actual thing I could have ever done. Like, but literally picked the worst option. But yeah. So, and that's where the sideboard guides are really helpful, where you can look at a sideboard guide and like, and sometimes with something that's a little less toolboxy than this, where it's a bit more linear, you can say, oh, okay, like based on this board, I should be playing this this general direction. But this thing, you definitely need like an actual like big primer. And yeah, sorry, Quinn.
I think win or lose, I'm sure it'll be a lot of losing to start. I think this appeals to me right now because in the state of Legacy where it's like, you're right, it is kind of fine, like balance-wise. But I just kind of want to play like interactive games with Magic. Where there are a lot of other metas where I typically don't do that. So it's funny when you're the first thing that came to my head when you said the hardest part is deciding how to like play Green Sun. I was like, oh, well, usually the hardest part for me is resolving Show and Tell.
it's so hard to resolve Show and Tell.
It's a different game. But yeah, just going back and forth and been like on Thursdays, I'm like, what do I want to play today? And I just want to like take a lot of game actions and like do stuff. And I think like this is like, this, and then obviously Tim talking to you about this, I'm like, yeah, maybe it's time.
Yeah, it's a fun deck. I'd suggest it. Second thing is like the Yorion playing is kind of similar. Yorion's actually a weirdly complicated card, just because you can pitch it to force and it adds an option every turn from turn three onward. And a lot of the time, you are supposed to just take a turn off and put Yorion in your hand, and it kind of, you're already, Legacy decks are mostly all hard. You've got cantrips and all this other stuff, but there's this extra axis of from turn one to five, I have all these options with GSC, and also I can use Yorion in pretty multiplicative ways. Brendan, I thought it was interesting that you were talking about the plan thing too, because lands might be one of the only decks where this is more true. Like lands is a deck that's very capable of like sculpting a specific plan and punishes you for not doing that.
Yeah, it's... We actually joked about it on last episode, but we were talking about Modern, but we thought back to Jody Keith, who released this video on lands, and it was like 2.5 hours or something, where it's just Jody Keith talking about lands and all the different lines and this and that, and him just yammering on. And it's like, that's the stuff you need to watch and like fully drink in, because lands, you have to like, one, have a very clear plan of where you're trying to get to and like work back from there. But there's just like, you can go to some pretty weird places with lands. And yeah, the planning required is definitely it's a pretty big wall. I remember Jeff picking up the deck and he's just like, how does this even work? Like, what's going on here? Like, if you don't know what you're doing, yeah, you get that idea of like that when you don't have a plan, you play like dog shit.
I watched that Jody Keith video and I read over and we talked about it for a while. And then I had it on Magical and I'm like, I'm ready to go. I've studied the papers, I've seen it. And you just, for the first opening hand, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it has some of that like explosive interaction potential where you have like, you can dredge your loam, you can play two of a large number of different lands that you have access to. All these lands have abilities, they can interact with their lands. Stage interacts with everything. Definitely a deck with a lot of sculpting potential. And Yorion Zenith really has that too.
I think at one point I staged your Caracas and started like screwing with your Uros and stuff. But there's all sorts of things you can do. Yeah, it's a super fun deck. I really enjoy it. It's definitely kind of like the deck I'll be continuing to play for a long time. But Yeah, some of these Zenith piles have definitely been piquing my interest for sure.
Yeah, I think we'll be seeing a lot more of them. I was doing some leagues after Eternal Weekend, and I was hitting the mirror more than anything else. And it looks like it's currently the second most played deck on MTG Goldfish, although their statistics are a little weird because of how they represent. But I do think the deck is going to be like at least the flavor of the month for a while.
In no small part to you.
Yeah, that's what happens when you brew a sweet deck.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, you know, we had some like early contributions to this. It was kind of... Kauf J was definitely like the creator of the current list, although it's weird because he was working on Yorion piles at the same time that like the Seattle crew was, and we were like talking to each other back during Oko era. So in this case, you know, I tuned it for Eternal Weekend and we contributed like prime time and some other stuff, but I mostly was like optimizing something. I wouldn't say it's a community effort because there's a very small number of people working on this deck, but a lot of people have been having results with it now. Definitely a breakout deck.
On the topic, I guess, shoutouts, Tim, unless there's anything else you want to say about Blue Zenith, shall we move on to That's Gas?
Sounds good. I think we covered it pretty well.
All right. I'm going to put you on the spot, but feel free to be like, no, like come back to me later. Do you have a shout out you want to start with as our guest?
Magic themed or?
It can be any, it's gone wild directions over the course of
the world's your episodes. Oyster.
Well, I got a shout out to Tuna Fish. I hadn't eaten very much tuna in a while. And in Hawaii, we had a lot of ahi. And oh my goodness, is it amazing. You got to eat more tuna fish. And then I got a shout out to in-person gatherings. It's been really, really fun to be able to see humans in meat space again.
Yeah, I think we're all 100% agreeing with that. That first night back at Stronghold was like, still feels pretty good. Jeff, who you got?
I need to complete the second half of my shout out from last week or last episode, and go with Kai Salutari, both for the amazing art, you know, on the Rorian. But also he just had an episode with a friend of the show, James Hsu, come out on Humans and Magic. And I was listening to it today, actually, as I was driving around, and it's, I mean, every episode James does is good, but this is really interesting because it's like through like a magic context, but it's not specifically even really about magic. It's mostly about Kai and like art and like kind of what it means to be creative and like his, you know, process and stuff like that. You know, great episode to listen to. Great dude. I mean, talk about crushing people on Doomsday. That's Kai through and through. Lots of great content that he makes and you know, oversees. So if you haven't seen anything, check it out.
Making content and while making content too. Like, I love how he finishes his rounds very quick because of it's Doomsday, and then he'll just alter cars on his stream in between rounds, and they look awesome. As we
he was talking about with James, that sometimes when he's like streaming, you know, Doomsday, he'll get like an idea just out of the blue, like mid-match for like a painting or something he wants to do. And he's like fighting the urge to just be like, all right, see you later. And like shut down the stream to go paint. So it's nice that you can fit those alters in between.
McBain, who you got?
There's so many thoughts with that whole Kai thing. Like I could just see him like having some brainstorm, like something he wants to go do. And then he's like, well, whatever, I'll just cast Doomsday and they'll think I'm making a Doomsday pile. And really I'm gonna like, go leave the room and like do something else for a few minutes and then come back. Oh yeah, by the way, you're dead. And just go from there. Interesting comment about the tuna, Tim. I recently, the last couple of weeks, have been like trying these random dishes that have had tuna in them. And I haven't had good interactions with the tuna. Like it's been like weird specials and stuff like that, where like there was like this tuna Benny and a bunch of things. I was just like, yeah, sure, I'll try it. Whatever. Tuna's great. And it just hasn't been hitting the right spot for me. So,
oh, I'm so sorry. You got to go classic.
The tuna and like
good
comment.
it was one of those, like, you know, sometimes there's those specials where you're like, this feels like it's jumping the shark here, but maybe it went far enough that like we got back to being good somehow. So I figured I'd be adventurous and I tried it. But
you haven't read like Kitchen Confidential? The restaurant special is like the shit that they're getting rid of. That's why you never want to eat the fish on special. Fish in general in restaurant, obviously fine, but like fish on special, it's like But anyways.
Well, from my N of one experience, that's probably a good point, actually. I might live by that a little bit more. And I'll go for like the specialty tuna places instead. When I go to Hawaii in February, I'll be sure to get like the nice, good tuna. So that'll be good. My shout out, Jeremy White. I think we've actually done him before, or the real Pokemoki on Twitter. He's been putting out a lot of great things.
It's not Jeremy. It's part of the Jeff gang.
Oh, Jeff. Jeez. And he's not even a Geoff either.
No, nope.
There's only one Jeff in McBain's heart.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
It's JTL. Just like you.
Jeff. Sorry. Real Pokemoki. They've been putting a lot of good stuff up on Twitter, but they'll like say very clear arguments for like why they think something is good, or, and it's generally in a positive light, which I'm always a fan of on the Magic Twitter community. But recently they were talking about Occulent Epiphany, or Occult Epiphany, which
card? Yeah, Occult Epiphany.
Occult Epiphany. And that was something that Elliot was actually playing last week. And he's going down a weird rabbit hole with that deck. He wants to like start pitching Lingering Souls and like Savine's like Reclamation and a bunch of other garbage to his Epiphanies for like max value. Tim's nodding his head in agreement, looking up this card, I guess.
It's currently one of the exclusive red borders on Magic Online. So
yeah. Well, in real life, it's a pretty sweet card. And the fact that it's instant is awesome. He's also been doing some really great stream work on a number of tournaments, honestly. And his commentary is generally like really spot on in terms of like how a game is going to play out or what are the things that matter. And when you're not going back to like having a plan and understanding what's going on, like when you're not really familiar with what a deck's trying to do, having someone like that as commentary to kind of like paint that picture of like where a player wants to go or what they want to do is really helpful. And it lets you see the little nuances that you might not see if you were just sitting there like mouth breathing, looking at the video. So that's been really great. And then what really kind of caught my eye on this was actually, he just posted a video on Darkbant, which I'd say is kind of like the sister of this blue Zenith deck. So it's not playing the namesake Green Sun Zenith card, but it's kind of playing everything else around it. A lot more cantrips and things like that. So he was doing a video on that and some of like the spicy one-ups in the deck and what his thoughts are. So he was talking about things like Raven's Crime, for example, which is a pretty, that's an old legacy card, but it's a pretty sweet legacy card as well. So
I played him. Last time there were God accounts, and I got Raven's Crime. So when I was playing like that, one of those Ant Leagues, and I was like, oh, this is not going to go well. Spoiler, did not.
Yeah, Pokemoki, definitely one of those mid-range brew kings. Like Pokepile.
Yeah, and a while ago, he was really going off about that like Stoneblade Esper Sentinel list that he had that was just like, I never got too far into that. Maybe you saw it, Tim, but it looked like this mid-range pile for sure. But yeah, generally, anytime Raven's Crime is good, it's really good. It's never just kind of sort of good. So yeah, not Jeremy, Jeff. There's too many Jeffs.
It's also a lot of Jeremys.
Yeah, that's true. Jays in general. So yeah, that's Gas. Over to you, Quinn.
I want to wrap us up. Obviously, Tim, because you're here, so thanks again for joining us. And also because, you know, you kind of talked about gatherings in person. I just wanted to shout out the Seattle scene. I think, you know, we logged on to the Zoom before we started recording. You were like, how long has it been since we've seen each other? Way too long, still too long in person. And so I think I speak for my compatriots here when I think we're dying to get down there for a tournament. And, you know, likewise, when we start holding a little bigger events up here, hopefully we'll see you guys up here. Because, yeah, I think a lot of people that we've forged some pretty strong relationships with. And so we'd love to see you and sling some cards again. Anything else before we wrap up for the evening? You can't really find Tim online, so we'll just skip that, and so that you can find the other three of us at Canadian Thresh on Twitter. I was going to say the SoundCloud, but you're listening to this, so obviously you know where to find the podcast. So we'll leave it at that, and we'll see you all in two thresholds. Thanks for listening.
Why are God episodes over?